Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Jacob Ryder. He is the Chief Executive Officer for the Alliance for Better Health. He's a family practitioner by training and has also spent some significant time both in the technology industry, but also as the Deputy National Coordinator and Chief Medical Officer for the Office of the National Coordinator. Jacob, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Nick.
So the Alliance for Better Health, tell us a little bit about that as an organization, what it is, what the concept is, and how it came about and how you ended up there.
Well, let's start with how it came about. Alliance for Better Health is a New York performing provider system. And a performing provider system was created by the New York State Delivery System Reform Incentive Payment Program. Sorry for the acronym, DSRIP. DSRIP is a program that many states have with the federal government. Technically, it's called an 1115 waiver, which means that a state asks the federal government for flexibility in how it spends Medicaid dollars. And the concept of this program in New York, it's a five-year program, and we are in year five of the five-year program. The concept is that Medicaid members seem to go to acute care facilities, emergency departments, and by extension, admitted to hospitals, roughly 50% too frequently, which is to say, if we look carefully at these visits, turns out that the visits either were preventable or the services could have been provided elsewhere. And so New York's proposal to the feds said, hey, if we can reduce that by 25%, we will save many billions of dollars per year, and the people will be healthier. And the way that I like to tell this story, it's that our job at Alliance is to improve the health of the people in our community, and the byproduct of improved health will be reduced acute care utilization. And so we have money that we're getting from the state to invest in programs in our community, and we have the freedom to invest that money, I won't say anywhere, but we don't have as many restrictions on how we make those investments. So it's given us the opportunity to learn, to experiment, to support programs that keep the people in our communities healthier, and therefore they don't need to go to the hospital, and therefore money is saved by the government. So that's a long answer to your short question.
So, I mean, it's interesting. What essentially you're talking about is the prevention, which I think I'd like to say 100%, but I never do because there's always somebody out there that disagrees. But let's say 99% of people both understand and realize that the more prevention you do, the lower the cost ultimately, the better the ultimate health. Because if you can stop anything earlier in the sequence, you're improving the overall healthcare. So you're really driving at that particular issue, which the healthcare system has been essentially pretty poor at, right? Not just New York, but across the US and I would say internationally.
So if you look at the way that healthcare funding, and notice that I put a space between the words health and care, because I think they're different things. The way that we have funded these activities doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And so, for example, if I'm a hospital and I just built a new emergency department, I need a certain volume,
right?
I need to support that emergency department with a certain revenue stream. And it's just like if I owned a supermarket, right? I build a supermarket, I spend $100 million. The more people who come into my supermarket, the more money I make. The more money I make, the better I can support the investment. Perhaps I borrowed money from a bank and I need to pay them back, or I got money from investors and I need to show them return, right? This
right.
is just basic business. And so the basic business of a hospital is in the fee-for-service era, which for the most part we are still in, to your point, the more traffic you get, the more revenue, the better you can be prepared to meet your financial goals. So this doesn't make a whole lot of sense if our primary goal is to keep a population healthy. So on some level, there's this conflict, right? Wherein hospitals are supposed to be investing in the health of a community, I would love to see hospitals that are more like fire stations, right? Which right, means yeah. permanently idle, right? It shouldn't that be our goal, is to have, just like the firefighters are sitting there watching reruns from Three's Company, wouldn't it be great for the ICU nurses to be doing the same thing, right?
Right, watching ER, to be clear, but yes.
Oh, yes, yes. We can debate which show they're watching, but
right.
but idle service providers is our goal, right? We don't want them to be busy. And yet, right now, the only way we can pay for them to exist is for them to be busy. And so what I would offer is that the civic good, the public good here, is to find a way to pay hospitals so that they don't feel the drive to stay as busy as possible. So getting back to, you know, what our purpose is, I'm not going to fix that sort of cultural, political challenge of how we pay hospitals. But we are going to make investments upstream. So the investments that we're making are, because we're seeing that there's greater return, is in so-called social determinants. I like to call them social factors, because social determinants always feels so determined, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want them to be determined. We want them to be factors that we address, and then these matters are addressed, and the people who are affected by these factors are better off. And so food security, food insecurity, housing and housing insecurity or insufficient housing conditions, and then transportation. Those are often cited as the three core parts of where organizations like ours will focus, but there are also other factors like language. Many immigrant populations don't speak English as a first language, and how can we help them to bridge that cultural gap? And there are also workforce issues and job training issues that where we can help with education so that we can bring people up to a place where employers need them or want them to be. Those are also important pieces. An employed person is much better for the economy than an unemployed person. And in fact, an employed person is going to have commercial insurance coverage, and so that will reduce the cost to Medicaid and by extension the taxpayer. So we're working in all those spaces.
So, I mean, these are all huge problems. And, you even cited this sort of challenge, you're not going to fix all of this. So how are you focusing on the steps to get you to that point? So I'm always looking for those sort of small inflection points that have made the difference. Where is it that the Alliance for Better Health is trying to achieve that, and how? What are the steps?
So I would offer that there are a couple of very basic things that we've done and or are doing. And I don't want to represent that we have solved the problems. In many ways, we have learned what doesn't solve the problems, and we are inching toward true solutions. So the first is, and you'll not be surprised because of both of our work histories is in this domain, is information technology. We wouldn't have been able to do this without a strong IT platform that connects the community together. So we found that was an essential part of connecting care providers of all kinds. So physical medicine providers with social care providers. We've created a network that we call Healthy Together, and we're using a technical platform from a company called Unite Us. There are many such platforms, and I think what's important here is that the platforms are more than directories. And I think, you know, we've seen in the market there are some products that serve as directories. So, you know, if you log on and you can find a food pantry in such and such a zip code. What we found with the directories was that even if you found a phone number, that phone number isn't enough to connect a person with the service that organization provides. So let's say I'm a typical family doctor like I am. And if I recall correctly, like you are, is that right?
Not exactly. I was an emergency room guy, but
we
did a lot of family practice as part of that service, right?
Right. So in either of those contexts, right? So you see Dr. Nick in the ED, or you see Dr. Jacob in the family medicine practice, and we identify a social need. Now, 5 years ago, probably what would have happened is I would have, or perhaps you would have too, you know, scribbled a phone number, looked up in the directory, scribbled a phone number on a sticky note, give the patient the sticky note and wish them well. And that didn't work all that well. A, I can't be 100% sure that the organization to which I have referred that patient has the capacity.
Right.
B, I don't even know if they're still open. Yep. Because these organizations, they sometimes open and close depending on the funding streams that they have. And just because they're in the directory doesn't mean that they're necessarily open for business. And C, I don't know that the person actually gets there. So what we've done in our community is we've created a network of only organizations that are A, open, B, have capacity, and C, have committed to provide the service. They've committed to close the loop with the individual. So I can send a referral through our platform and I know that the individual gets there. And in fact, we have folks in our office, and it's a bit of an air traffic control purpose, right? We have staff sitting in our office watching those referrals, and we're seeing who gets to where they need to get to and who didn't. And if they didn't, then we're proactive, right? We don't just lean back and say, oh, well, yes, another plane dropped out of the sky, which means yes, another person didn't get the service that they should have had. And so ideally, 0% of those referrals result in a loss to follow up or didn't get it or whatever. So the first piece here to answer your question from 7 minutes ago is the technology framework, right? That works well, that engages. The second piece that's also important that you heard me mention as part of this is trust. The whole network needs to trust each other. And as my former boss, Farzad Mostashari, used to say, change moves at the speed of trust. And so these organizations needed to trust that we have their business best interests in mind. The individuals need to trust that the referrals are going to be managed professionally and carefully and consistently. You know, we all need to trust each other because this business is about sharing responsibility for the people that we serve. And that means we need to trust each other. And I'll offer that many of the social care organizations, sometimes they're called community-based organizations, did not trust that we were in this for the right reasons. And it actually took us the better part of a couple of years to build that trust in them so that they would participate and we could serve the people together.
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and today I'm talking to Dr. Jacob Ryder. He is the CEO of Alliance for Better Health. We were just talking about that implementation and the two steps to get to this point, both with technology, but importantly, trust. And one of the things that stood out to me in your concept that's, I think, really important, but has been missing, and I'd like to understand how you're achieving this, is that follow-up with the people that don't. So, you know, in your scenario, the piece of paper, and, you know, we've all had that, we hand it, there's no way of knowing. How are you determining, and then obviously playing the flying squad, in fact, launching that fire crew, right, to go and address them. How do you get that feedback? How are you sort of closing the loop there?
Well, the technology framework helps us close the loop because we're using the system in order to facilitate these referrals. So what'll happen is instead of the sticky note with a phone number on it, a referral is placed into the system by anybody who's part of the network. So if I'm a food pantry and the patient has a cough, I'll use the system to refer that patient to primary care. If I'm primary care and somebody has housing insecurity, they'll use that system to refer the patient to a housing provider. And then in the system, our team has a dashboard of sorts that allows them to see the follow the bouncing ball, you know, watch the referral traverse from where it begins to ideally where it is completed. And so after a certain amount of time, 24, 48, 72 hours, somebody moves from green to yellow to red. And then when somebody's at red, then our team starts to engage. So say somebody didn't make it to the location where they needed to go. The first thing our team does is tries to contact that individual. And often what do we have to use as a contact info? It's a telephone number. Now, some significant percentage of the time, that phone number is working. So we make a phone call, we send a text message. And sometimes the individual says, oh, you know, I needed that service, but now I don't anymore. Thanks very much. We're done. And then we can close it and say, okay, they, you know, in some way, their need was satisfied, or they no longer have that need. And that's probably a good thing. Sometimes they say, oh, well, I couldn't get to such and such for such and such a reason, right? Maybe they had a transportation issue. So if they did, they had a transportation issue, then we initiate transportation assistance. So we can pay for Lyft to pick that person up and bring them to where they need to go. And sometimes that's all it takes. Now, some other percentage of the time, the phone number doesn't work. Maybe they ran out of minutes on their cell phone. Maybe that was somebody else's cell phone that they were with them that day when they were getting the service, but they're not available anymore. But then we'll, you know, ask more questions, and as much as we can, triangulate that individual's information with other information sources that we have, such as information in the health information exchange or information that we have from the state. So we'll try and find that person, including going out and looking for that person in the part of town where they might be, if they have an address, going to that address, or sending folks out to that address to find them to close the loop. So our team will do whatever they need to do in order to connect that person with the services that have been identified as things that they need.
So part of me says that one of the secret sources here, not to pick on a specific thing, but the essential element is the fact that you've created that collection and you've curated it, and everybody is signed in. And you made a really interesting point that stood out to me again. It wasn't just physician to service, it was service to physician. So this was a complete ecosystem that everybody is signed into. Is that true? I mean, is it the ecosystem that is part of the sort of essential element to this?
Yes. And, you know, as two physicians talking with each other, I think we could admit that despite our years of training, we are not the center of the universe, right? I know.
Well, I felt the earth move there for a second.
Right. So physicians quite are right. Trained, right? If you think back to our training, it's a very egocentric domain.
Yep.
We write orders, and when individuals don't do what we recommend, we call them non-compliant. Oh, wait. I'm sorry, we've changed our language to the ever-sensitive non-adherent, right? Mm. Remember how we used to say non-compliant?
Non-compliant,
and now we say non-adherent. Give me a break. It's still very paternalistic, right?
Yep.
And so what we have recognized is that the physicians actually play a very small role in it. And that's actually a good thing because we're going upstream, right? All of what's happening is happening before people get to the medical activity, because as we medicalize social problems, in fact, that enhances the likelihood that people sort of fall down this cascade and, you know, be diagnosed as sick instead of get the help that they need and are more healthy, right? And so that's why I make the distinction between healthcare and health care, because we should be focusing on health. And some of the care that happens, all lowercase letters, should be addressed upstream to these matters where if we attend to them well, folks aren't going to have the social challenges that they have, or as a consequence, behavioral health challenges that they have. And then, you know, if they're not addressed at that level, that's when folks will fall into the medical domain. But as you know from your practice, I certainly remember from my practice, you know, a lot of problems have social and behavioral roots, right? And there's that famous Robert Wood Johnson work that addressed, you know, what are the causes of people's illnesses? Well, 80% are social and behavioral, and 20% have medical or genomic roots, 20%. So we're focused on the 80% because we think that that's actually where we're going to get a lot more bang for our buck.
No, I think absolutely. So at the beginning, you talked about the organization. You said it was a five-year program. You're in year five. What's happening next? Where's this going to go? Because I can't help but sit here and go, well, this is exactly what people need. It's, you know, flipping to that 80%. I have a chart that sort of really amplifies that point. How do we expand this? Because this feels like this is the right thing to do. But if you're at the end of the program, is it going to expand? What's next?
So the program was 5 years, and the state and the feds are now having conversations about whether and or how to extend the life of the program. Ideally, you know, I think it was an aspiration that at the end of 5 years that the private sector had taken all of this on, that we had completely migrated to value-based payment in our communities. And as a byproduct of that migration to value-based payment, these investments that we are making in the social factors would have been self-evident to our communities, our hospital systems, and our health plans. And then, you know, this funding stream would have shifted into their domains, and they would be paying us to do this work. Just like all aspirational plans, you know, it didn't quite happen that we're finished at 5 years. And New York State recently released a draft proposal that they're going to bring to the feds that expresses that this program would be extended through 2024. And so we'll see how the feds respond to that proposal. We're optimistic. And as I said, I was before our recording here, I was in DC last week, and the folks at HHS are very interested in this topic. And so we're optimistic that the feds and the state will come together and find a way to fund this program for another handful of years. As we migrate toward ownership of these topics by the private sector. So I think that's the first piece, is that we're moving in the right direction. Everybody agrees we're moving in the right direction. We have not reached the final endpoint yet where there's agreement about exactly what to do. And the second is, I think, you know, we haven't learned everything that there is to be learned. And that takes investment from government to support the transition from where we were to where we ought to be.
Fantastic. So in the remaining minute that we've got, any thoughts on how we can expand this beyond you? Because I'm assuming this is just a local New York State program. How do we get this out in other communities?
So other communities are experimenting. I'll offer that Centene, the national payer, has created an organization called Social Bridge, which is trying this in other markets, such as New Orleans. Humana has announced a big investment in this domain. So you hear that, two health plans. The state of North Carolina is doing things in this domain. So I think we're seeing little bits, just like what we're doing nationwide, where organizations are, and state governments, health plans are making these investments because they make good business sense. And I think that's what's refreshing to me, is that this isn't a Democrat v. Republican or anything like that. This is what's good for our communities, what's good for business. How do we compete on the global stage? Because if we're spending money on letting people go to the ICU when they shouldn't be, we can't compete with other nations because we're putting too much money into places where it doesn't belong.
Absolutely. Well, as always, you know, it's always a delight to talk about these areas. I'm really grateful that you took the time. I just love the whole concept of this, focusing on that 80%. It feels like we should have been doing this a long time ago. I'm not quite sure why it's taken so long, but, you know, delighted that that's the case. And, you know, unfortunately, we've run out of time. Just remains for me to thank you for joining me on the show.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed it as well, and look forward to doing it again at some point.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com, and tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.